You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Wednesday, the 14th of July, 2021, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. Well, if you want to know what is likely to happen to your country once white people become the minority and black people become the majority, all you have to do is look at what is happening in South Africa. Right now, there is incredible devastation and destruction that is being carried out in Durban and other cities, supposedly because Jacob Zuma has refused to cooperate with the police in corruption investigation, and he's actually been imprisoned. So all his supporters are going on the rampage. There are videos on Twitter of white people being whipped, videos of people walking out of stores, pushing great big filled up trolleys from the looting. That the looting is just at another level when you compare it to the rioting and looting that went on in America last year in the Black Lives Matter riots. It makes them look like small fry. It really does. I don't think I actually have any contacts over there, so I can't really get the inside story. But it does look like it's being ignored by the major news channels. But you can find footage of it, as I say, on Twitter, and I suspect also on Gab and Telegram. Well, today I wanted to continue with this news story that we were getting into yesterday about Jamaica demanding reparations from Britain, supposedly for slavery. And it is Olivia Grange, Jamaica's Minister of Sports, Youth and Culture, that has said that they will be filing a petition to do this, although I'm not quite sure what sports, youth and culture has to do with reparations for slavery 200 years ago. Well, continuing with this article, Britain was not the only European nation to take part in the transatlantic slave trade, with the Portuguese, Spanish, French, Dutch, and the Danish all involved. And also you can add there, you can add that black people weren't the only enslaved people. You also had the Barbary slave trade, which took at least a million white slaves from Europe and took them to Tangiers and sold them on all around the Arab world. You also had countries like Bulgaria that were occupied by the Ottoman Empire, and they used to take one male child from every family in order to take them as slaves. And they created a class of people called Janissaries, who were basically mercenaries. They were white mercenaries that were brought up by these Arabs and then turned back on their own people. All of this gets covered up, and everybody just concentrates on the fact that black people were enslaved, because all these other nations that were also enslaved, they still managed to build civilizations to varying degrees. They still managed to succeed within white civilization. If you look at Arabs, they've managed to succeed in white civilization. But if you look at black people, they haven't been able to. So they make this excuse that it's all to do with the fact that they were enslaved. But when you realize that white people were also enslaved, you think, well, there must be something different to this. And you can also look at the fact that it was actually white slaves that built all the infrastructure in Jamaica before the black slaves were imported. Because we used to have a thing called indentured servitude here. And if you were a villager, which is where the term villein comes from, where we get today's modern word villain from. It just meant villager. And if you were a villager, you ran the risk of being kidnapped and put on a ship and taken over to the Americas and being put into indentured servitude, which would last for 8 years. And the rationale for this was that these white country folk, they're not really doing very much in Britain. They haven't got much of a chance to better themselves. If we send them off to America as an indentured servant, then at the end of the 8 years, they will be freed and they'll be in another country where there is lots of land and they will be able to become pioneers and build a life for themselves. And that was the mentality of it. Obviously, it's cruel to just kidnap somebody and stick them on a ship and send them over the other side of the world. But the mentality behind it was that this will, in the long run, it will improve their lives. It will mean that their children have a better life than they would have had in Britain. And that is essentially what happened. And this is how the Highland clearances were done. And they removed the Scots from the Highlands, and they removed lots of the Irish, and they removed lots of the English. And of course, at this time in Britain itself, you had white chimney sweeps, which were children, 6 or 7 years old, that were being sent up chimneys. You had white children that were working in the mills and in the factories. They would lose fingers, they would lose limbs in all the machinery. It was just as dangerous, if not more dangerous in actual fact, for the white children in Britain. Because when you think of what the black slaves were doing in Jamaica, they weren't working with industrial machinery. They were simply picking cotton or picking tobacco or picking sugar beet. They weren't being sent in amongst machinery that was operating in order to quickly repair a thread, say, or to repair machinery. And yet the white people that were doing that, they managed to make something of themselves, and they're not claiming that they need reparations from the British government, are they? So why is it that Jamaica thinks that they should be given reparations? Well, they say an estimated 600,000 Africans were shipped to toil in Jamaica, and that's according to the National Library of Jamaica. And Miss Grange adds to this, our African ancestors were forcibly removed from their home and suffered unparalleled atrocities in Africa to carry out forced labour to the benefit of the British Empire, she said, adding redress is well overdue. Well, her African ancestors may have been forcibly removed from their homes, but that was done by their African ancestors. That was done by their own people. And it is true that they suffered unparalleled atrocities in Africa, but they were carried out by the Africans. When they were brought to America, they didn't suffer unparalleled atrocities. They were given room and board, and they were expected to work for their keep. They call this forced labour. But everybody has to work to provide for a living for themselves. People do have to labour. They do have to find employment. And these slaves were expected to work for their keep, basically. I don't think they rebelled against that. I think they understood that if they worked hard, they would be well rewarded for it. And that was the redress that they had. That was the reward that they had, was their keep, basically. So to then be saying today, well, we want reparations for that. Well, we've already had it. You've already had your wages. And if you really want to go after somebody for this, and you think that this was wrong, even though it was an institution all over the world at the time, then they should be going to their African ancestors who kidnapped them and then sold them to the whites, because they were the ones that were getting something for nothing. The whites were actually paying a lot of wealth in exchange for these slaves. The white people had already paid a lot of money for these slaves, and then they paid out in keeping them, basically, and keeping them alive and keeping them healthy and keeping them happy. It was the African ancestors that were getting something for nothing, and it was the African ancestors that they should be going to now. Of course, the African ancestors squandered that wealth, so they don't actually have anything now that the descendants of the black slaves, or the claimed descendants of the black slaves, can actually claim back from them. But white people being the sort of people that save for the future and invest their wealth, white people built something with the wealth that they made from their system. But the African chiefs, they must have had a similar amount of wealth that they made from the system as the white people did. But simply because they don't actually have anything for the blacks to claim from them, they go after whites. I think that's the reason. I think if the Africans did have a lot of wealth, I think then perhaps the Jamaicans might be going after them, which really says that, it's very cynical, this. They're just looking for who is it that we can shake down? Who is it we can get some money out of? Rather than actually thinking of, is this actually right? And is it actually just to be asking for reparations for this? Well, let's have a look at some of the history of Jamaica. Seized from Spain by the British in 1655, Jamaica was a British colony until it became independent in 1962. Well, that's fairly late for it to become independent. India became independent just after the war, didn't it? It is not clear whether Jamaica also intends to seek reparations from Spain. The island was discovered as part of an expedition led by Italian explorer Christopher Columbus in 1492, and it was brought under Spanish control. Other West Indies islands were then used as outposts by English pirates and privateers involved in raiding Spanish treasure fleets. And that's a time that the British really can't be too proud of. We really did sort of have a legalised pirate industry, where we would do exactly what it says here, raid the Spanish boats, basically. Some 200 years later, in 1655, Jamaica was seized by the British and would go on to become integral to Britain's supply of sugar, a highly sought-after commodity in the 18th century. The Caribbean countries of Jamaica, Antigua, St. Kitts, Nevis and Barbados, which were under British control, connected Britain to Western Africa and the Americas, and formed a key part of the triangular slave trade between the countries and Britain. And it's called a triangular slave trade because basically the Americas benefited from it, Africa benefited from it, and Britain benefited from it. Each point of that triangle made wealth from this. It wasn't just Britain that was making money from it. They grew in population from a few thousand in the mid-17th century to 18,000 in the 1680s, with slaves making up more than half of the total. So they really can't have been that upset because, they could have resisted, they could have fought back, couldn't they? It was even numbers there. And I dare say that actually on these farms, they probably outnumbered the white people 10 to 1. That was the normal situation. The West Indian country of almost 3 million people is part of the Commonwealth, and the British monarch remains the head of state. Britain prohibited the trade in slaves in its empire in 1807, but did not formally abolish the practice of slavery until 1834. Again, so it was the British that put a stop to slavery. And as I outlined yesterday, the reason for colonizing Africa was so that they could put a stop to slavery, so they could stop the Africans from selling the slaves. It wasn't that the British needed to be stopped from doing this. It was that the Africans needed to be stopped from selling their own people. And the way that that was done was by building colonies in Africa, building roads between the colonies, teaching the Africans to make their own products, teaching the Africans how to extract their own resources from the ground, and then taking them to the coast and exporting them around the world so they could take part in trade in the same way that the Indians were taking part in trade and the Chinese were taking part in trade. You know, the Indians had things that they wanted to trade with the rest of the world. So did the Chinese. They had tea, they had coffee, they had silk, they had all sorts of things that we couldn't produce for ourselves in Europe. It's just that in Africa, the only thing that they had for export was other Africans. That's where the root of the problem was. It was Africans selling other Africans. It wasn't a problem because the British only wanted to buy Africans. If the Africa had had other things that they wanted to sell, the British would have exchanged them for the wealth that they had. Now, obviously, the African chiefs, they wanted what the British and the Europeans had, but they didn't have anything to exchange for that. So to help them, the British built these colonies and educated them and taught them how to manufacture goods. And eventually they were able to convince the Africans to stop selling slaves. But they had to use military might in order to do that. They really had to be physically forced to stop doing this because they had been doing it for thousands of years. That was the economy of Africa. Now, to compensate the slave owners, the British government took out a £20 million loan, a very large sum at the time, and Britain actually only finished paying off the ensuing interest payments in 2015. So think about that. The reason for this was so that the slaves that had already been bought, because it wasn't just a matter of putting a stop to the slaves being sold, it was what do we do with these slaves that have all been bought. Their employers have all paid a lot of money to have these, to buy these slaves, that they'd paid the equivalent of £10,000 each for one of these slaves. That's why I say they're not going to mistreat them. You're not going to mistreat an item that you have paid £10,000 for, are you? You're going to want to keep that item in tip-top health so that it can work to the best of its ability on your farm. Now, the slave owners had to be compensated for this because they'd paid out all of this money. That's what that £20 million loan was for. And the British people were so concerned that they wanted these black slaves to be free that they took out this massive debt that they were paying back until 2015. Now, by rights, they should have been saying to Africa, well, you should be paying this. If you want your people to be free, then we'll loan you the money to buy their manumission. We'll loan you the money to actually set these Africans free. But the Africans weren't concerned about it. They couldn't care less about their black brothers that were in America. In actual fact, they wanted to continue kidnapping other Africans and selling them. So what this shows here is that the British people are extremely charitable. They care very much about the other races, and they were so concerned about the other races on the other side of the planet that they took out this massive loan that they were paying back for another 150 years. I mean, it's so ungrateful of Jamaica to now be demanding reparations after the British have already done so much for them. The reparations petition is based on a private motion by Jamaican lawmaker Mike Henry, who said it was worth some £7.6 billion, a sum he estimated is roughly equivalent in today's terms to what Britain paid to the slaveholders. Why should what Britain paid to the slaveholders be paid to the slaves? I mean, his logic here is that, well, the slaves weren't given any wages, so that covers the fact that that's their pay, basically, for working on the farm. But they were given the equivalent of wages. They were working for their keep. They had everything that they needed was provided for them. As I pointed out yesterday, you did not have shops that you could go out and spend your money in. What would they have done if they had been given money? What were they going to spend it on? What were they going to spend it on a farm in Jamaica? What they needed was to be well looked after, and they were well looked after. If you think today how much money goes on rent or a mortgage, it's about 60% of somebody's wages. And you can say probably about another 20% goes on food and another 10% goes on electricity bills. And then you could say probably about another 10% people can save. So that's 90% goes on living costs. And these slaves had all their living costs provided for them. So it's really only that small little 10% that people can actually save today that these slaves didn't have. And to say that they should be worth £7.6 billion, I mean, all they were doing was picking cotton, picking tobacco, or picking sugar beet, as I say. And what are the sort of wages that you get for that today? I would say they were probably fairly low. He continues, he says, I am asking for the same amount of money to be paid to the slaves that was paid to the slave owners, said Henry, a member of the ruling Jamaica Labour Party. Well, hang on a minute. If he is looking at this as some kind of compensation, who is it that should be compensating these slaves? Surely it was the people that enslaved them, not the people that bought them and paid their living costs and looked after them. It's the people that enslaved them in the first place. Again, it's these African chiefs. That's who they should be going to. Henry continues, I'm doing this because I have fought against this all my life, against chattel slavery, which has dehumanized human life. Has he? Does he fight against it in Africa? I believe it was in Mauritius that only finally made slavery against the law about 10 years ago. You can still buy slaves in Libya, in the Tripoli market there. You can buy a slave for $200. Is he fighting against that? Or is he just looking for what he can get from white people, using this as leverage, using white people's guilt over slavery as a leverage? Grange herself declined to give a figure. The petition, with approval from Jamaica's National Council on Reparations, will be filed pending advice from the Attorney General and three legal teams, Grange said. The Attorney General will then send it to Queen Elizabeth, she added. And what do they think Queen Elizabeth is going to be able to do about it? I mean, she is just a figurehead. I know there are all these conspiracy theories that the Queen runs the world and all the rest of it, but she really is just a figurehead. It is the crown that is at the top of everything, and the crown is the corporation. It's the City of London. It's the banks. It's the courts. It's everything all together. The Queen is just a figurehead. The initiative follows growing acknowledgement in some quarters of the role played by slavery in generating wealth in Britain, with businesses and seats of learning pledging financial contributions. In compensation, they include insurance market Lloyd's of London, pub owner Greene King, and the University of Glasgow. Well, again, let's just look at what happened in Africa. There must have been at least as much wealth that was generated in Africa by the slave trade as there was generated in Britain. So what happened in Africa? Where did all that wealth go? What did they do with it? Where are the businesses and the seats of learning that will be able to pledge financial contributions to Jamaica because of all the wealth they were given? Well, there aren't any, because they just squandered that wealth. The petition also coincides with increasing efforts by some in Jamaica to sever formal ties with the United Kingdom. Opposition lawmaker Mikhail Phillips in December presented a motion to remove Queen Elizabeth as the head of state. And again, think about this. What did the British do for Jamaica? Well, they freed all the slaves. They set up a system there so that the Jamaicans could have a functioning democracy. They built communications infrastructure there. They built roads there. They built transport. They set up schools. They educated the people. They did everything they possibly could for the Jamaicans. And how do the Jamaicans repay the British? Well, they want to remove Queen Elizabeth as head of state, and they want to sever all formal ties with the United Kingdom. Let's have a closer look at the slave trade here. This article here has a little box that gives us some more details. More than 15 million people were shackled into the transatlantic slave trade, according to the United Nations. And again, what they mean there is just black people. More than 15 million black people were supposedly involved in the transatlantic slave trade. What about the Arabs that were involved in it? What about the Jews that were involved in it? What about the whites that were involved in it? Everybody in the entire world has been enslaved at some point. They've either been a slave owner or they have been a slave. The transatlantic slave trade was a triangular route from Europe to Africa, to the Americas, and then back to Europe. Firstly, merchants exported goods to Africa. Got that? Firstly, merchants exported goods to Africa in return for enslaved Africans, gold, ivory, and spices. So the African chiefs exchanged the slaves for goods. They exchanged the slaves for wealth. The slaves that they got for free, that they didn't have to pay anything for, they exchanged them for wealth. The ships then headed across to the American colonies, where the slaves that had been exchanged for wealth were then sold for sugar, tobacco, cotton, and other produce, which was then brought back to Europe for sale, benefiting British citizens and producing profit for businesses based in Britain. And of course, they had that sentence there saying that, oh, this brought profit for businesses based in Britain. What about the profit for businesses based in Africa from that first part in this triangular slave trade? The first and most important part was the producer of the slaves, the person that was harvesting them and then selling them on. That is the key point in this slave trade, and it was that key point that had to be knocked out by the British to put a stop to it. I mean, it is just ludicrous that the British are being held to account for this, and that reparations are being called from the people that have already paid for the slaves twice, don't forget. I mean, the slave owners paid for the slaves when they bought them from the African chiefs, and then the British government paid for the slaves again when they bought their manumission by refunding the slave owners for the money that they had actually paid out. So these slaves have actually been paid for twice, and now they're demanding that they be paid for a third time. Was their work really that valuable? Picking tobacco, sugar beets, and cotton? Once in the colonies, the slaves worked on plantations and inside the homes of Europeans as cleaners, cooks, or other household domestics. Now, it may be today that people look at household domestics and they look at the people that employ household domestics and they think perhaps they were mistreated, but that is a fallacy. People that employ household domestics, on the whole, they are extremely friendly towards them. When they leave a place that actually has household domestics, because a lot of places in the former British Empire, in the hot parts of the world, they do have servants and they have household domestics. And the British people stay in touch with them and they write to them and they try to find out how their children are doing and whether they're going to university and how they have succeeded. And that's the way that white people are. These cleaners, cooks, and other household domestics will have been looked upon by the white slave owners as if they were part of the family. They really did look on them as if they were part of the family. This is why when these slaves were freed, they were given so much land and implements and livestock. They were really given everything that they could to make the best of their freedom. And most of them didn't want to be free. They didn't understand what it was that they were supposed to do with this newfound freedom. They wanted to work and they wanted to please their master. They looked upon the master as a type of father figure. And the master looked upon the slave as a type of child. And if you want to find out more information about that, all you have to do is go to the original source material. Go back and look at the writings from the 18th century and the 19th century, or the 1800s basically, up to the 1870s, and you'll see that there are authors in the South, in the American South, that used to own slaves, people that didn't own slaves, people talking about slavery, talking about the conditions that they were in. There is a wealth of literature out there which describes the situation and how it was. And it's very obvious, even from reading the racial books of the time, where they're talking about racial differences, that these people that are talking about the racial differences, they are very fond of these African slaves, and they looked upon them as their own children. That's how they were looked upon. They were not looked upon as something that should be abused. They were looked upon as a child that needed helping. And, you know, they looked at these Africans and they thought, well, we feel sorry for these people. They don't have clean water. They've never built proper houses. They never developed the wheel. It's like they don't know how to look after themselves. And being kind and charitable and the merciful sort of people that we are, we thought, well, we can help them out. We can do all of these things that they're not capable of doing for themselves. We can do all of them for them. And in exchange, we'll ask them to work in the areas that are too hot for us to work, because they're used to being under the hot tropical sun. When they put whites on to work on these plantations, they would come down with malaria and yellow fever and dengue fever and all these tropical diseases, whereas the black Africans were quite happy to work under the sun because that's what they were used to. It was a mutually beneficial system. White people in Britain obviously didn't understand that because they weren't over there in America. And none of them had actually met a black person before. So they didn't understand that black people had difficulty developing these technological advancements. I mean, they still have difficulty getting clean water today. They still have adverts on the television asking for charity money to provide clean water for Africans. So this is the situation that white people were faced with. We have these black people that don't really know how to look after themselves up to the same standard that white people do, but they can work. So why don't we provide all that for them and expect them to work for us? It was mutually beneficial. But according to this newspaper report here, it says slaves were victim to an oppressive regime that exploited labor to make profit for wealthy landowners. Well, hang on a minute. Is that exploitation to expect somebody to work for their keep? I don't think that is exploitation. And why is it oppressive? Where do they get this idea that it was oppressive from? They say they were bought and sold as property and often lived under horrendous conditions. They didn't live under horrendous conditions. They lived under good conditions. They were kept fed. They were kept healthy. They were kept warm. They were kept medicated. They were in conditions far, far, far superior to the conditions that they were living in Africa. In 1672, the Royal Africa Company was formed and it held the monopoly on the British slave trade. And Jamaica became one of the busiest markets, and African slaves soon outnumbered Europeans 5-1. 5-1. They must have been happy there, or there would have been an uprising, surely. And also, once they were freed, they didn't want to go back to Africa, did they? They wanted to stay where they were. The gold it supplied to the Royal Mint was named the Guinea, after the West African country from which the gold was taken. And people may say that that was wrong today, to take the gold. But it was a resource that the Africans were not using themselves. There's a famous quote that the African was walking, crunching under his feet diamonds and gold with no idea of the wealth that was there. The Africans themselves had no idea how to extract it. So the British and the whites and the Europeans, we taught them how to extract it. And we built mines. And we paid them for their work. Again, we paid for their keep and we extracted the gold. The former British colony of Jamaica was at the centre of the transatlantic slave trade, with Africans transported to the island and forced to work on banana and sugarcane plantations. They weren't forced to work. They were expected to work for their keep. I mean, we look at things today and we think, well, if people can't work, if people aren't unemployed, they have benefits, we have a social care system. There was none of that back then. If you didn't work, then you had no keep. You couldn't survive. So they weren't forced to work. They were expected to work. That was the system. And the slaves expected to be put to work. They would have been upset if they hadn't been put to work. They would have thought, well, what's wrong with me? Why is everybody else getting to go out on the work detail and work on the farm, and I'm not allowed to? I mean, seriously, they wanted to please their owners. The British Army and the Royal Navy owned and hired slaves as labourers and soldiers, most of whom went to the Corps of Military Labourers and the West India Regiments. So they're just telling us that this was an oppressive regime and all the rest of it. And then they're saying, well, the British Army owned and hired them, and the Royal Navy. And obviously the British Army and the Royal Navy are not going to be oppressing the people that work for them, are they? They're going to be treating them well. The Crown benefited from the trade whenever estates were passed on in lieu of government taxes or following court cases. Greenwich Hospital, which was managed by a government department for a number of years, took over Golden Vale Plantation in Portland Parish, Jamaica in 1793. Now, I would say that proves that these slaves were not mistreated. You've got a hospital which owns that plantation. Surely a hospital is not going to be involved if they think the people that are working there are going to be badly treated. That's going to be the best people possible to actually own the plantation. They are going to ensure that the slaves are well treated. And quite clearly, they didn't think that there was anything wrong in doing this. As I say, because it was mutually beneficial. Estimates suggest Britain was responsible for transporting 3.1 million Africans, of which only 2.7 million arrived, to the British colonies of the Caribbean, North and South America and other countries. What they don't tell you there is that the same proportion of white sailors that were on these ships, they also died. In actual fact, they were more likely to die. The cargo was treated better than the workers on the ships. And it's always that way. If you've got a valuable cargo, you treat that cargo very well. You're not going to risk damaging the cargo. If the ship's owner lost a sailor, he could always hire another one. If he lost a slave on that transatlantic journey, that was £10,000 that he'd lost. So who is he going to look after more, the slave or the sailor? Obviously, he's going to look after the slave more. So when they tell you that only 2.7 million arrived, if anybody brings that up, you should point out the fact that it was more of the sailors that died than the slaves, because the slaves were worth more to the ship's owner than the sailors were. The British Parliament abolished the transatlantic slave trade in 1807, resulting in increased costs for planters in Jamaica. And I don't think that's true, because we have already heard in the Greatest Britain's series that, in actual fact, slavery cost more than employing people. It was much cheaper to pay people wages than it was to actually provide the keep for the slaves. I forget who it was that made this allegation. It was one of the characters that we've covered in Greatest Britain's. It was declared that all manner of dealing and reading in the purchase, sale, barter, or transfer of slaves, or of persons intending to be sold, transferred, used, or dealt with as slaves, practiced or carried in at or from any part of the coast or countries of Africa, shall be abolished, prohibited, and declared to be unlawful. Now, why is it that it had to be the British doing that for the Africans? I mean, all the Africans had to do is proclaim their own law that they were going to abolish slavery, and slavery would have stopped. But they didn't. It had to be the British, because the black Africans didn't have a parliament. They didn't have a system of laws. Parliament went on to approve an Emancipatory Act that gave all enslaved people in British colonies their freedom by 1838. Many former slaves moved to nearby hills to live on small landholdings, and planters were compensated £19 per slave. So, where did these slaves get their small landholdings from that they moved on to? They were given them gratis by the slave owners, because the slave owners cared about them so much, because they didn't want to see them come to any harm. So the slave owner was compensated by the government £19, and the slave owner then gave the slaves land, farming implements to farm the land, seed, and livestock. And if you look at the book Lynchings in the Deep South, The Truth About Lynchings in the South, that gives you the details of how much of this land was given away, how much it was all worth, how much the livestock was worth, and then it tracks it over the next few years as that farmland then went to waste, basically, because the African slaves didn't know how to farm. They didn't know how to do it for themselves. All they knew how to do was pick tobacco and pick sugar beet. They didn't know how to do the rest for themselves. That's why this institution of slavery came about in the first place. It was to their benefit, and it was to the slave owner's benefit. Anyway, thank you very much for listening. I will be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.